This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined for a bit of a bonus breakdown in the Easter holiday time type stuff by Dan to talk over a couple of bits and pieces. Dan, hello.
Hello. Happy Easter to everyone that celebrates it, and happy Chocolate Egg Day to people that don't, I guess.
I think your Wi-Fi connection had a lot of Easter eggs, so you'll be obviously having to upload these separately and do the editing to make sure people see you looking all lovely and HD. So no one will ever know the difference once Dan sorted out the video. But yeah, a couple of bits to talk about, Dan. And at the end of this breakdown, it'll look the same length as normal, as much as me and Dan won't be talking for too long on it. Because Dr. Michael Masters is going to take up the last 20-25 minutes of it. If you've heard Dr. Michael Masters on the show previously, he's best known in the community for his work on the future human hypothesis. He is a biological anthropologist, which means he studies past human civilizations, different species, etc. And he's really well placed to talk about something that we're going to kick off, Dan, talking about, which is the return of The Mummy Returns, Brendan Fraser, great movie. The return of the mummies from Peru and Mexico. They had an event. They never had like a birthday party. Jaime Musan, let me be professional here, and Joyce Mantilla, and some others, and we'll get to that, put on another event presenting these bodies of alleged non-human skeletons, mummies. This time the event was in front of an audience presenting apparently more data. And the last time it went on in March, it went really badly because the live stream never got off the ground. Obviously, Dan, you were trying to access one live stream. I was on another. Other people were on a different one. Some were in Spanish. Some had no audio whatsoever. And it eventually went down several times and didn't really get off the ground. So it was a bit of a disaster.
Somewhere in Sumerian as well.
Yes. But this time it seemed to look and sound a bit better. But the problem being it ended up in a raid by the Peruvian Ministry of Culture. So we'll get to that, Dan. On this one, Jaime and co seem really determined here to keep pushing this. Does any aspect of that make you think they at least think there's something to this? As much as we are not saying we think there is, but do you think he truly thinks so on this occasion?
He seems to have the courage of his convictions. And even though, I mean, we've shared it, we've put it up, we've spoken about it before, there are so many hoaxes that Jaime has been involved with. He's had the courage of his convictions through them all. And it's really hard to kind of judge what he genuinely believes versus what is an outright hoax. And he knows it's a hoax and he's pushing it anyway. But I would certainly say there's an air of not everybody is being told everything. And this is one of the reasons why everyone's been so eager for peer review to happen and for outside experts to come in and look at these bodies and take their own samples and do their own work without any involvement of the team that's working with them now, is just so you can separate it from the circus that's been happening. And bless these guys, say what you want about the results. I know I'm not an expert. I can't understand them, whether they were real or not. I'm relying on other people translating, but they just can't seem to hit the ground running. Stuff always happens, right? Whether it's just production issues where they've got like 50 different events starting at the same time, or whether they're being raided by the Ministry of Culture, who's there to take the bodies. And, you and I and other people in the community could have told them that the bodies weren't there to be taken. But you almost feel like it was just for show to pressure them to say, we're serious about this. And I think there's an interesting thing to come out of it where just the fact that they were raided is going to fuel the fire of people that say, this is real, therefore the CIA are muddy in the waters and getting involved and interfering. It's a cover-up. And it's feeding it. And people are just choosing their own narrative. I'm really excited for the positive news that happened that came out of it. Do you want to, I imagine you have the names there and stuff.
Is that of the scientists who are involved?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so we had, and I'm going to quote this from Spanish newspaper Marca, and I know Marca well because it's always quoted in terms of footballing grounds when it comes to Real Madrid and Barcelona. They are the big newspaper in Spain. And they, this paragraph's from them. The doctors who were at the event have prestigious credentials to show. And these were American doctors this time. The three were Dr. James Caruso, who is the chief medical examiner and coroner of the city and county of Denver, Colorado. Dr. William Rodriguez, who is a forensic anthropologist at Maryland State Medical Examiner. And Dr. John McDowell, retired professor at the University of Colorado, who is a forensic odontologist. And we'll get to that. McDowell is the most resounded one in a bunch. He's the one that spoke most on behalf of his colleagues. All three have concluded that these bodies urgently need further investigation and nobody can claim they are fake. This leaves the door open for more academic institutions to get their hands on Nazca mummy samples for further study. Couple of things on that. Not to spoil what Dr. Michael Masters says, he mentions the three and what their roles are. He says, okay, coroner, okay, if makes sense, they've got bodies. Forensic anthropologist, again, that was Dr. Michael Masters, you know, forte. It was good to have him on speaking about that. Odontologist is teeth. And he was like, okay, but I don't understand why an odontologist would be there other than lending his credentials to the situation rather than I'm there to look at the teeth of the situation here or chew it over.
Very
so,
good.
But I think it was a good thing. They did have three outside, what appeared to be outside neutral bodies here to look at this.
Three bodies?
Three bodies, yeah. Oh,
nice.
God, yeah.
Good,
said
yeah.
It. I said it. It's in the brain now. That's my 10 cents. Yeah, there's a very good
very good.
Yeah. I thought you'd appreciate that one. But I think what's good is these three haven't sat here and made outrageous claims, which I think would have been a huge red flag. They've sat there and largely said, look, yeah, these need more investigation, more science needs to be done here. They put no time frame on it, which again, I think is a really good thing. And I saw quite a few positive comments about that online as well, that they've not come out and said, yeah, next month we'll know if these are real or not. They've said we can't put a time frame on it. We just need to do the due diligence, which is fantastic. And I think the way it should be. So I don't really know what else can be taken from the situation. And for those who might not know, the reason the Ministry of Culture from Peru raided the event, like Dan sort of alluded to, is that the bodies are believed to have essentially been grave robbed. Not that they were grave-robbed, intact, non-human bodies. The Ministry of Culture for Peru and others believe that the bodies are indeed a mix of human bones. That's something I think Dr. Michael Masters goes into in fantastic detail when he speaks, and also in a way that I understood it, as to these are the bones of adults and small children and babies that are indeed 1,000 years old. So those bones will date 1,000 years, but also animals and literally put in a very strange random order. And he explains why, even just from his point of view, looking at the scans, he can tell why the bodies themselves wouldn't have a function that would work. They wouldn't anatomically. And I said to him, a bit like having, you know, a really cool action man that has 50 different poses, and you know, you can move the wrists and the arms, and getting the really cheap $5 action man, which is literally a rigid piece of plastic. And he was like, essentially, yeah, it wouldn't make sense how it was put together. So he goes into details as to why, from an expertise point of view, he would, you know, very much these aren't genuine, which makes a lot of sense. From this, Dan, it did much change for you in terms of we talked about the optics of this last time, didn't we? Anything changed?
The optics still continued to just be a comedy, quite frankly. I think we were messaging and I was like, oh, no way, they've got raided at the beginning of the event. And I said almost straight away, someone needs to make a comedy movie of this, because love it or hate it, this is just one of those kind of farcical things that keeps happening and someone's going to get a lot of kicks out of this. I feel like it's piling stigma back on when that kind of stuff happens. But luckily, we got to a place where we've got these three experts coming in now. The only thing I can think of for the odontologist, the dental guy, is in terms of use of things like ceramics and things like that, where he might have experience with certain materials that are in the bodies. That's the only thing I can think, but it's loose, admittedly. So we've got these three experts that are coming in. They've insisted, you know, Jaime's not paying them. He's not going to be involved with their investigation. The science will take as long as it takes, and they're committed to the peer review process. These are all good things. this is where it should have started before the Mexican hearings. This is what they should have started with. Three other experts coming in to check their results. Where it goes now, we'll see. But there have been so many people that I've seen just arguing over them being real or, fake. And I just say, if you're concluding at this point and you don't have expertise and you're just concluding based on the YouTube videos that we've seen, you're concluding too soon. Just let those plates spin and you don't have to just believe or disbelieve. You can just be along for the ride. It's going to happen anyway. And the scientists have shown up now. The other scientists have shown up now. So we're going to have the work checked. So we'll see where it goes. And there's, they say that worry is paying a debt on something that hasn't occurred yet. So don't worry about it. Just let the work happen and science will do what science does.
Dan and I are big fans of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And like Dan says, with this being a comedy of errors, there are every single one of these events so far, you could have stopped at one point on Jaime Musan, stopped the audio and played the Curb outro, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and it would have been pure Larry David, the raid, the live stream going down, the confusion. I just don't see how this gets anything else going for it that's positive. And I would hope one way or another that these scientists involved can carry it forward. And if that turns out that they have to say, look, we don't think there's anything to this, then great. I mean, if they turn around and say, actually, we've got something and more get on board, wonderful. I will eat my shoe. That's fine. But I'm very, very confident I'm not going to be a shoe down anytime in the near future.
And you've been watching a lot of Is It Cake? So it could be, Susan might switch out the shoe for a shoe cake, and then you're not going to have to eat leather. Luckily, Jaime has also said, why would I be doing this? And if I wanted to risk my career, which sounds to me like if this doesn't pan out, then he will go quietly into the night. But we'll see if that happens.
M. Night Shyamalan kept making movies after, dud after dud eventually. So, I think it's... Yeah, but best of luck to them. Good to see some scientists on board. And I very much recommend, folks, hang about once me and Dan stop talking. Listen to Dr. Michael Masters. He explains us really, really fairly. Rants a little bit in a really good way about why and quite passionately he's so sure they're not genuine. But also that, I wouldn't spoil the whole thing. He hopes they are, but he tells you why he doesn't think they are. So,
and he's an expert, just to emphasize He's the guy to 100%. Listen to, not me, him.
Yeah, Dan, you pointed at me there as you said that. He means Dr. Michael Masters.
Yeah, so I'm going to put a real picture of Mike.
When you went him, on to some other little news bits, Dan, from the last week or so. Ross Coulter on News Nation made a point that I just to discuss, to be honest with you, that he doesn't think the UFO topic will move forward until more folks from the inside start going public, i.e. the whistleblowers, and some more proof is presented. As things stand, the state of the UFO conversation at the minute, I don't disagree with that. I don't think that's true in terms of the whole conversation and the future of it. But where things sit right now in this kind of, I don't know, the Marvel movies had phases? And obviously, phase one, phase two, you built up to Endgame and you moved on from all those and storylines moved on. We are in this kind of phase three, phase four, whatever it is, where it's the political military era, the Tour of Stars stuff started this all off, New York Times, Lou Elizondo, all that stuff is where we're still at. This is just way down the movies of that phase. If you want to look at before that, having that kind of 90s, 2000s, VHS documentary era phase, Stephen Greer, that was all a thing. And then before that, you had the kind of 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, where it was newsletters, the same cases, the first abductions, the first of a lot of things, and a lot of government denial, then, I think we're probably in phase three or phase four of the UFO conversation. Not that I don't doubt there'll be a phase five, six, whatever that may be, and however that may look. But where we are right now, I agree with Ross's statement that until we get more folks, more David Grushies coming out the woodwork, it's not going to go forward. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like what you said about the phases there because, Marvel phase four and five being kind of damply received and people are just yelling, get on with it. And I feel like people are doing exactly the same thing with UFOs, just yelling, get on with it, I didn't see that from Ross, but I can almost hear the choruses of people yelling, well, tell us then, Ross. You know, Ross has met a few of these people that supposedly have been in the programs that he shared little teasers and things like that. And we've said before, Ross is kind of in a between a rock and a hard place. You know, if he doesn't share, he's told that he's withholding things. If he does share, he's told that he should share more. And, you know, he's just trying to be a journalist and not burn his sources, which I understand. But we are at that point now where we need more substance. And I think this is what a lot of us would want from another hearing. You know, go back and try and get the videos that people like Lou Elizondo alluded to existing within ATIP, the triangle video, the coming out of the ocean, things like that. You know, if we could only see one of these kind of things, it would just help a lot. But you've got to kind of wonder if Lou has said a lot, you know, if you're impatient, come back in 5 years and you'll kind of see a lot more progress. And we're probably in the middle of that 5 years now. And so it kind of feels like, you know, that middle film of a trilogy where just it's wheel spinning, but you're kind of laying the groundwork for the big finale. So everyone's eager to get to the finale and to get to that kind of disclosure moment. But as we're always told, it's a process and it's a slow roll. It's a drip, 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 you know, so we kind of have to wait. But yeah, unfortunately, we got to get through phase 4 and 5 to get to Infinity War and Endgame again and have a incredible bunch of movies, you know. What have we got coming up? James Fox's documentary that's meant to contain James's teasing things, teasing firsthand witnesses, firsthand workers from the legacy programs kind of talking. We have Cobell teasing the same. Same thing in a few other places as well. So it seems that this is the year we'll kind of hear from them, but it remains to be seen. I would hope so.
And I think you're right. If Ross Coulthart does come out and say, do you know what? Live YouTube broadcast or live News Nation probably be better. This Friday, I'm going to share everything I know about the UFO subject. Okay. One, fascinating. Two, burns all his bridges instantly with any source he has. Three, half the people will love it, half the folks will hate it. And we're no further forward because then it's just Ross saying a lot of stuff. And that would be the same for James Fox, Jeremy Corbell, George Knapp, Lou Elizondo, David Grush, because we had the guy, we had David Grush come forward and he did tell us about crashed craft and programs and biologics, and that's what everyone always wanted. And it just went to show it wasn't enough. So what difference does it make a journalist, well-respected or not, coming forward and sharing all this stuff that he's been told secondhand? So I'm fully understand why these folks do sit back, and I'm sort of in the camp right now. Just my opinion, might be right, might be wrong, might be indifferent, but we need 10 David Grushies coming forward. You know, several of them at the next lot of hearings, people going on the record, hearing that people have spoken off the record, behind closed doors, but have spoken officially to Congress and all that kind of stuff. That's what we need to really move this phase of things forward. Otherwise, there is the chance that because of elections and conflicts elsewhere, Christ, something like the pandemic comes along, a natural disaster somewhere, that all this just goes away. And you know that whole thing about, and a lot of people banged on, no, the toothpaste can't go back in the tube. Yes, it can. But that doesn't mean you don't open another toothpaste tube and start squeezing. So, you know, that's just something, we're at this point. It could go back. It could go forward. It could stagnate. But it's just, you know, if people got the patience to kind of wear it out. I think where people that you're at, Dan, or myself and others maybe listening to this, not everyone, because I know some of the guys and girls in a Discord chat will say that they're wobbling a little bit with the UFO topic and they might take a break. And people do that with all kinds of stuff, whether it's, you know, wrestling, sports, you know, UFOs. Is it cake season 3? You know, that's what people do. You take breaks from stuff. Marvel movies, loved them intensely. Now I'm not fussed. Now I don't go out my way to watch a lot of them. But something could always pull me back in. Whereas other folks like yourself, Dan, like myself, we're in this because, well, we just like it anyway. And if you've had your own sighting and experience, I think that tends to lend it more to, it doesn't matter what happens from an outside perspective because, well, you know, that I know what I saw comes into it, doesn't it? That doesn't, you know, like I've said to you before, if it came out tomorrow, Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, all the Two of the Stars guys all came forward and Tom DeLonge went, look, I was just really high one night, and this is all a massive misunderstanding and joke that just went on far too long. There's no UFOs, there's no aliens, and they all just laughed about it and went away. It wouldn't make me go, I'd be disappointed, but it wouldn't make me go, oh, well, UFOs aren't real, because yeah. I've had a pretty incredible sighting myself. So, and I know other people are out there in that bracket as well.
That's so true. And yeah, we've all had our own experiences, so we're all carrying those, and it just, we're not looking and pinning our hopes on what Elizondo says, what Grush says, and that's the be-all and end-all. That's the on-ramp for a whole bunch of people that we wish would take this more seriously and look at it and just apply scientific tools to it. For me, I've had experiences that, you know, I'm comfortable saying that I think there's something here based on my own experiences. I know plenty of people that say the same thing. I can't prove anything from my experiences without a time machine or anything, but, you know, it is what it is. But I think you're absolutely right that the conversation that we're having is a little different to how it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And so it's a step forward. Even if this goes away and it has to come back around in 10 years again, this has been a step forward, a little bit of progress. So you got to kind of smell the roses and pull the positivity out of it and insist that there's something good here, you know?
Yeah, I get if folks are excited about things right now, if they're frustrated, if they're indifferent, if they're totally still looking at cattle mutilations and abductions and have no interest in what's going on, any and all of that is totally fine. And I think that's what interests me when folks get in touch and they tell me that certain aspects of it don't interest them. Some folks aren't that interested right now in what's happening in terms of government and politics. They don't feel they need that kind of disclosure because of X, Y, and Z. So, but on that, Dan, Danny Sheehan on Whitley Strieber's podcast said essentially there's a new draft of the UAP Disclosure Act, UFO Disclosure Act 2.0, that is in the hands of the US Senate Intelligence Committee, which is essentially the same as the original bill with a couple of little tweaks here and there, which I'm guessing, Dan, they're going to want to implement into this year's NDAA later in the year. And they're just giving themselves more time to try and push this through, hoping things progress and happen outside of it that give them the momentum and power to do that. Sound about right from what Danny said on Whitley's show?
Yeah, pretty spot on. You know, every year they introduce the legislation early and it's edited and changed until it gets passed. A lot of people have asked, or a few people at least I've seen say, why don't they introduce it as its own legislation? Legislation focused on one issue really gets passed. So you kind of, this is why you see a lot of American politicians latch on to these bigger things like the NDAA, which has passed every single year for God knows how many decades now, no matter how kind of, you know, rocky it gets, it always passes. So it makes total choice. It makes total sense to fold it in there and get it in there. Get it in early as well just means that there's more time to, you know, wheel and deal and talk to different parties about it. So hopefully we get to see this language soon and people can start feeding back. People that objected to it last year can start feeding back and we can get a bit of dialogue and hopefully make sure it passes this year.
And hopefully in that time, some whistleblowers have come forward. More briefings have been had behind closed doors. Potentially another hearing has been had in public. Mm-hmm. That can all hopefully give weight to getting that back through in a way, shape and form that is acceptable to everyone. But I understand why some folks had reservations, and we talked about the eminent domain stuff. At first I thought that was a shoo-in, had to go through, but then I get why Jacques Vallée and others were like, actually, that might not be the best thing given X, you know. So that was pretty interesting. Yeah. But Dan, just before we hand over to Dr. Michael Masters, a lot of UFO content online right now. Three Body on Netflix. I've still not watched it. I finished the Chinese version. Loved it. I've got a big soft spot for that, as long as it was.
It's thorough, right? And tonally, yeah. Feels heavy.
Sometimes overly thorough, you know. Sure. Here's an interrogation scene that normally would be a 3-minute or 30-second flashback, but it's two episodes. I really enjoyed it and I stuck with it. Not watched the Western one yet on Netflix. I will do, hopefully, in the next week. Parasite the Grey is on Netflix now. Dan, you know about that, don't you? Because it's an anime as well, is that right?
Yeah, it's an anime, and I mean, it was a fairly solid anime, so I'm really excited. As soon as you told me it was out, it kind of slipped under my radar.
Very quickly, like, oh, what's it about? One line synopsis?
Kind of hard to explain. Just it there's a lot in it that overlaps with the UFO subject in terms of thinking, how would they be here? How would they hide amongst us? That's all I'll say. Spoilers and stuff like that. But cool. Yeah, should be really interesting.
Yeah, a couple of documentaries on Netflix as well, and Dune 2 is out, Dan. I've still not seen Dune 1, but yeah. Dune? Will that sound Dune, right in my accent
Dune,
on this?
Dune the 2nd.
Because I would say June, but that sounds like June the month. But I'm actually saying...
I have this conversation with Layla, with Elena, yeah, all the time, I think, because it's just an American British thing. June, Dune.
Look, for example, Dune? If you say duplicate, I would say duplicate, even though that's a J, not a D.
Yeah, we have these debates often about American versus British. But yeah, Dune, apparently, is, I'm told, how you say it, not June. But yeah, both are wonderful. And there's a really cool idea in it about rumor and myth being used against a species that kind of operates on faith. And I won't spoil too much about the story. The book's been around for yonks, and there's been so many different adaptations, but this seems to be the definitive one. So I'd say if you get a chance to see it in IMAX, go see it. It's lengthy. You have to be in the mood for it, but it's well worth it if you kind of find yourself in that really, you know, pensive 3-hour-long movie type mood.
Well, Dan, we have to jump off because we are going to do a live recording with DJ and the Calling All Beings crew right now as we record this, which will have been a few days ago, folks. So go and check that out. The Ryan Wood podcast is up where we talk about crash retrieval programs. Really enjoyed speaking to Ryan. Richard Dolan will be out next week, folks, so look out for that one. And I've got a load of other guests lined up as well, so I'll let Dan know who those are soon to do thumbnails, because I've not even done that yet. But thank you. I'll hand over now to Dr. Michael Masters, who will tell you why he thinks that non-human alien bodies aren't necessarily that. So joining me to end this breakdown, I have with me anthropologist, lecturer, researcher and author, and he's been on the podcast multiple times now. I'd love to welcome back Dr. Michael Masters. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing good, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, and thank you for joining me at very short notice. It is the weekend. We've all got stuff to do, but yeah, you managed to jump on, I think, on X or Twitter, as we all still call it, to the conversation around the Peruvian Mexican mummies that Jaime Maussan and Luis Mantilla, I hope I'm saying that correctly, have been presenting now for some time. And your comments got a lot of people's attention. I think Dan and a few others had said about getting you on to discuss it. And I'd already messaged you at that time as well to say, look, if you want to come on and talk about this, that would be fantastic, because you've got me, who's a layman with no expertise, commenting on just my opinion on what I'm seeing at face value. You're someone with a real background in this, Michael. So just tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself, first off, who may not have heard those previous interviews, but also why you're probably well placed to talk about these.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I do for a living. I'm a biological anthropologist. I've specialized in hominin evolutionary anatomy, modern human variation. I've done comparative anatomy research with a number of different fossils found at a 3.5-million-year-old Australopithecus site in South Africa, 150,000-year-old Neanderthal site in a cave in France, in the Cognac region of France. And I teach forensic anthropology. I work with the local law enforcement office. When they find bones in a basement, they call me and I come and assess what they are, what they could be, what they couldn't be. Look at how they got there. So yeah, bones, at least the osteological side of things, is definitely in my wheelhouse. I can't really speak to the genetic aspects of it, the biochemical aspects, but when we're talking bones, that's kind of my thing.
So this seems to be a case of like ET CSI, essentially, at the minute. Yeah. Because, we've got these mummies now. There's multiple of them. Some of them we're hearing now apparently were pregnant at the time they were.
Right.
Mummified or whatever's happened to them. I believe last time I heard, Jaime and co dated them around 1,000 years roughly in age. How I followed this, Michael, let me put it to you, is
sure,
I've struggled to keep up with it because of, one, the language barrier when a lot of the stuff's posted in Spanish, but that's my problem, no one else's, you know, I don't speak Spanish. But two, in my opinion, I don't think it's been presented terribly well from the get-go. I think there was the issue that Jaime Maussan's had a lot of false starts or hoaxes in the past that have, yeah, come to be. I think there's a list of about 20 or so. And then they had the initial event. That got a little bit of attention. And in the UK, I'd done some radio interviews on it, and I think they wanted me to be really sensational at the time. And when the producers would ask me, you know, what are your thoughts of these aliens? And I think they were surprised when my response was normally, I don't think so. But we'll see. A lot more testing must need to be done. For me, the people I know who I would expect to be involved didn't seem to want to be involved in this in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And then you've had the previous event, which was meant to be the live stream, which ended up going down, not working, only being broadcast partly in Spanish, and then largely a bit of a flop. And now we've had an event on the 4th of April that concluded with the Peruvian Ministry of Culture raiding the event and taking the microphones out of their hands. Now, how have you followed this from the get-go, and what have your thoughts been along the way?
Yeah, I've been following it for a while. And when I heard there were bodies being presented at the Mexican congressional hearings, I was kind of excited. And then I saw what they were and I was like, Jesus Christ, we're doing this again? Because we've been down this road so many times since 2017 mostly, but even earlier, going back to 2014, even the late noughties. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate to see two things, the way it's rolled out and what's being shown and how we just keep doing the same thing over, repeating the same mistakes. And honestly, if they want to do this right, and they could, if this is actually what they claim it is, this could be one of the most read and cited papers in Nature, science. You bring in the peer review process. There's a modus operandi for getting this out into the public. But that's been the opposite is what's been happening. It's a total shit show. It's a circus. Every time they try to do anything, mostly because there's no content. There's nothing to actually show. And we can talk about some of the details of the osteological problems if you'd like. But yeah, from the beginning, like we have some similar things that happen in paleoanthropology when we find a new hominin species. And you can see some analogies with the Homo naledi fossils that were discovered in the Rising Star Cave in South Africa. Lee Berger and his team brought these to the surface, literally and figuratively. And there was a slightly different way they did it. With the good old boys in paleoanthropology, you'd find something, you'd bring in a team, they'd study it for 10 years, and then publish in Nature, and then publish in Science. They did it a little differently. They still had a team of experts, but they published in an open source journal with confusing dates, and they made some bold claims about petroglyphs and intentional burial of the dead 300,000 years ago. And there was backlash, and then there were responses to that article, and back and forth, and back and forth. And we've worked out a consensus in the scientific community, but they bypassed all of that. It's all fanfare. It's all, look what we have. Let's make this circus environment around this. And that, A, detracts from what they have, and B, just makes it impossible to really have an informed conversation, because there's people that just want to believe and they feel like they have something to latch onto. But if we actually break it down and look at it scientifically, there's very little content there.
So, yeah, it very much seems to me like when you're asked in school to show here's an equation, solve it, but show you're working and it's worth 10 marks. What they have done is put the answer down, and which is worth one mark, and we don't know if it's right, we don't know if it's wrong.
Yeah,
show
your
work. No working at all along the way. And again, if you could break this down for me, for some of the things that you've spotted, but that I will understand it, because what I have managed to glance at on various different videos online, I've struggled to make sense of what exactly they're presenting as to why this is genuine, as opposed to someone standing there. I understand they're qualified, I'm told here, as doctor, professor, whatever that may be, wonderful accreditations, but they then don't explain to me why it's relevant, other than these three bones aren't human, so this makes it non-human. That's what I'm kind of seeing.
Yeah, and there are animal bones in there, absolutely. And there's also 1,000-year-old human bones. So yeah, the date is going to be 1,000 years. These are pre-Hispanic, Peruvian, oftentimes children, sometimes baby bones that are stuck in with animal bones. It's this mishmash of the two. The skull of these is almost definitely a llama skull, reverse llama skull. And you can identify a lot of human bones. Those are very easily identifiable. So then you have to ask, well, is this human? Is it not human? Is it alien? Would you get the same evolutionary characteristics in the osteology of an extraterrestrial? Maybe. But what's interesting is you can see the manipulation. You can see the intentional manipulation of these, the way they take them and move them around to different parts of the body. They might take a child's humerus and put it in as a femur, for instance, or take a tibia and put it in as an arm. They'll take foot bones, metatarsals, metacarpals, and switch them around with the hands to make the hands look longer and freakier. But you can identify those bones. This is where it starts to become a problem. So it's this mishmash of animal and human bones. But you know, that's one thing. Like, that's pretty easy to spot for me, even a simple radiograph, but you can see it in the CT scans even better. MRIs tend to focus on soft tissue. CT scans focus on hard tissue. You can see the hard tissue. You can see the bones in an MRI kind of as a shadow, like a negative. So you can get it from that as well. But a big issue for me is, in addition to how clearly they've picked and chose from these different mummified bodies, which is a crime, by the way, and that's probably why the Ministry of Defense showed up, or Ministry of Culture, I mean, because they're stealing bones. They're grave robbing children's and adults' graves from 1,000 years ago and then making these things and selling them internationally. There were two, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware, that showed up in the airport in Lima, Peru. And they looked at them and said, these are dolls. These are humanoid dolls that are stuck together with glue and all kinds of other pieces. And they put fake skin on them. But the big issue, like the first thing that jumped out at me as an osteologist, as an anthropologist, is that we have this expression that form follows function. It's this basically law of biology. The form of an organism is indicative of the function that it serves for that organism. We see this throughout evolutionary biology and all these different forms of life. The problem with this is that you have all of these bones that are stuck together in ways that indicate that it has no function whatsoever. For instance, here's a good example. If you take, let's say, the ball and socket joint of your leg. So you've got the ball joint, the femoral head that sits inside the acetabulum on the innominate, your pelvis, and it can move in all of these different directions because it's that form for the function of moving your leg, running, with all these changes specific to the hominin lineage that allow us to run very efficiently. The femur angles in, that ball sits in there perfectly. You don't have that with these mummies. These just, the innominate sits on top of two bones that aren't even femori. So when they reconstructed these things, they didn't take the biomechanical aspects of this into account at all. There's no functional morphology identifiable in this. These things wouldn't be able to move. And that's a huge problem. I don't care if it evolved on a different planet. I don't care where it's from. It needs to be able to move its body to evolve in the first place. These things wouldn't have been able to do that. The other thing, like if you look at the hands, for instance, and this was another big red flag for me. You look at the hands, this is probably one of the best examples. You can see how they change over time. Not that they've evolved, but the way in which they're made changes over time, and it's gotten more sophisticated. At the early ones of these, you can see from, you know, 2017 on, there's little pieces holding them together on the inside. I think maybe they thought people wouldn't x-ray them or look at them in a CT scan, but you can see the things holding the bones together. And eventually they started to take bones and put them together in a way that made them look like it's all a bone, but they're all different from one each other. That's what I'm trying to say, Andy, is they're all different from one another. And you would expect what we call synapomorphies or homologies, that if these are part of the same species, they would all have the same bones in the same places. And they don't. They're all different and they change over time. They get more sophisticated, but that just indicates that they're getting better at making these things. They're getting better at trying to fool people, but that doesn't mean that they're actually related to one another. They're not one species, not one race. They're just without getting here, here's actually, sorry, I'm going on a rant right now.
No, go for it.
It all pisses me off. I'm trying to keep it like layman's terms, but still provide the information that's necessary to understand this. Here's a good example. Take the primate foot, or actually any foot of any tetrapod going back 400 million years on this planet. Okay. So you have a whale, you have a horse, you have a chimpanzee, you have a human. The bones in those feet are all the same. They're just repurposed for the function that serves that form, for that species to be able to adapt and survive and persist in its individual environment. So you have descent with modification. You have homology or synapomorphies, where they're all similar to one another because they evolved for different functions, but they're still very similar. You look at the hand or the foot of any modern human, even though we're all pretty different on the outside, it's going to be the exact same thing. You don't see that with these. Even if you compare an orangutan, for instance, we call them four-handed climbers. They're able to climb with their feet the same way they can climb with their hands. Despite being 200 pounds, they can shimmy up a rope. So you look at their foot morphology, and it's different from ours, but all of the bones are in the same place. There's not extra bones. There's not foot bones stuck in with the hand or hand in with the foot. They're not turned around the wrong way like what you see in these mummies. They articulate with one another, and they're self-consistent across other orangutans and with other closely related animals like ourselves. You don't see any of that in these mummies, and it's a huge red flag. I don't see how any scientist, even without a strong background in functional morphology or osteology, could look at these and not just say, well, obviously these are fake. And it's not just me and a few others. Like, the vast majority of scientists who have looked at these, they're not talking about it because they just write it off and they say, well, yeah, obviously those are fake. What's the point? But I keep seeing this come up so often in the UFO community that it's important to talk about this. Somebody needs to say this, or it's just going to be like, well, it looks real to me, you know, but let's look at the nuances of this. Let's look at the details. And once you do, it's very obvious these are not real.
What you were saying, especially back at the start of that rant, as you want to call it, because it was spot on. It was good. It made me think of like a cheap Action Man doll, you know, when you're a kid and you would get one that was like $5 or $5 instead of like $20 or $30, where it moved and was posable and had like 50 poses, and you would get the cheap one that literally stood rigid and that it was just all one piece and it would have nothing you could do except there as that's the pose. So you're saying essentially that's what these bodies would have been, just there was nothing they would have been able to do that would have made any sense even. Which I totally get. Can I just ask though, right at the end you've mentioned about how scientists in general are looking at this and people like yourself and academics, and you're all going, no, that this is ridiculous. In this latest event on the 4th of April that finished with the raid, I can't believe I'm saying those words.
There's never a dull moment in ufology, is
no,
there?
No, I think I went online to check how it was going and I commented peak UFO Twitter when I
you
see
did,
that
yeah.
an event's been raided. I think that's the one you ended up commenting on.
Yeah, and I commented by not commenting, because if I comment, then people just unleash the trolls on me. And I... at this point in my life, I'm done with that shit. You know, I think
that's
it's
where you're
on conversations, but Twitter is not the place to do it, unfortunately.
No, it can be limited.
Like that little rant I went on, how many characters is that? You can't fit that into 180 on Twitter. Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's too much to discuss. And yeah, I wanted to jump in, but I knew that wasn't the right place. So I appreciate you having me on to talk about these in more detail.
No, definitely. And so you mentioned like other folks staying away from it. At this event, though, they did have three American scientists. So we had Dr. James Caruso, who was the chief medical examiner and coroner of the city and county of Denver, Colorado. Dr. William Rodriguez, forensic anthropologist and Maryland state medical examiner. And also Dr. John McDibble, retired professor at the University of Colorado, forensic odontologist.
Yeah, so he's a tooth guy. Yeah, I looked these up as well. Yeah, you've got a coroner. Great. They know about bodies. They know about bones. A forensic anthropologist. That's what we do. Like, that's why I'm called in by the city county when they find bones. The very first thing you do, just to give a very short background, the first thing you do is determine whether it's animal or human. Because a lot of times people bring me a bone, they're like, oh, I found this mandible somebody buried in my backyard, and it's a deer mandible more commonly than anything else. So is it human? Is it non-human? If it's human, then you have to determine whether it's a crime, whether it's recent and should be investigated by the police, the detectives, or whether it's historic, or in this case, prehistoric with these bones. So it's not a crime. We're talking about something that's very old, 1,000 years old. And then from that point, you do age, sex, ancestry, time of death, mode of death. If you can determine that, you can't in prehistoric cases unless they have part of their head missing or bashed in or something like that. So we go through this process in order to determine what they are, how they died, what age they were, what their ancestry is, and all of these things. And you can apply a lot of that to this case too. So it's really cool that there is a forensic anthropologist involved. And then the odontologist, these things don't have teeth as far as I can tell. So I'm not sure what an odontologist is going to do or why they're even a part of this. But let's back up to something you were talking about early on in this conversation, is they're bringing in people. Okay. or these people offered to come in for whatever reason. I don't speculate about what any of these people are doing, what their motivations are, what their intentions are. I can't determine that. All I can do is look at the bones and give you my professional opinion about what's going on there. What I can say, and this goes back to what we were talking about, is if they went through this process the right way, where they subject their analysis and their paper to peer review, then the journal picks who the peer reviewers are going to be. So they're not bringing their own people in like they are in the Mummy case. What they're doing is saying, this is all of the data that we have. These are our results. These are our conclusions. They submit that to a journal, hopefully a high impact journal like Science or Nature, for instance. And then the journal selects the independent researchers to validate, refute, ask for more information, ask about their methodologies. None of that's happened. So I really don't care who's involved. I want to know what the data is. And a colleague of mine, a friend up here in Montana who's a medical doctor, he's been trying to get the original radiographs and the original CT scans. So I do have an open mind. You know, there's a lot to me that's a red flag, but if I could see that original data, and I work with MRIs, CT scans in my lab all the time. I have all the software to go through these top to bottom, left to right, and look at all of them. And I would love to do that. And maybe I would change my opinion if I had access to them. I think it would probably be the opposite, but I'm open-minded. We haven't been able to get them in the last 3 months. I was talking to some people yesterday who think they can get those. And that for me would be the most important thing for my own professional assessment. Like, I will definitely look at what others say, but I'm also really skeptical and curious and cautious about what they say because of the context of how all of this has been done and how it's all been presented and the absolute circus that it's been the entire time.
Well, we'll leave that there then, Dr. Masters, because that, I think it's pretty obvious your opinion, and I think it's where most people tend to sit right now on this. I've said before, and I'm sure you'd be the same, given you're best known to people like myself for Future Human Hypothesis and the books you've written, and talking about, you know, the fascinating aspects of the what coulds and the speculation on the UFO subject. I would love for this to be genuine. I would love for these bodies to be truly same. Non-human.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'd be flying there straight away, wouldn't you? Like, if that was open season, you know,
if
these
there was
are genuine,
a reason to, yeah, if there was some indication that these were real, I'd be buying a ticket and calling everybody trying to get down there. But unfortunately, that's not the case. But, you know, and I think you've said this many, many times, and I think the twat post that I responded to is one of these as well, where it's like, this just muddies the waters. This takes away from legitimate things happening in this community and makes it something that the 6 o'clock local news can be like, oh, crazy people in Mexico with their crazy, stupid aliens. So yeah, the more attention we give this, takes away from the actual legitimate things happening in this community. And at this time, more than any, those are important to focus on. We need to keep the ball rolling and not get distracted by stupid things like this.
Well, listen, Dr. Masters, always a pleasure. If folks haven't picked up any of your previous work, you've got the extraterrestrial model, you've got identified flying objects also, and also we have Revelation. I've got it behind me, I think. Actually. Yeah, they're there behind me.
I'm not here to promote anything, Andy. I'm just here to set the record straight on some very clear problems with the osteological aspects of these mummies. But I appreciate the shout out, but that's not why I'm here today.
No, but you've gave up your time at the weekend and everything. So, you know, at least I could do. So thank you very much, Dr. Masters. And
thank you.
Look forward to having you back on soon.
Sure thing. Always a pleasure.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he